The following may contain offensive language, adult humor, and or content that some viewers may find offensive. The views and opinions expressed by any one speaker does not explicitly or necessarily reflect or represent those of Mark Rattledge or W2M Network. Please listen with caution, or don't listen at all. Ladies and no, I don't like it. You under me, you above him. There we go. Now we can start the show. What, you want to be under Robert?
Yes.
You want to be under Robert? There you go. Happy now?
He was the one who said he wanted to be under Robert.
I don't care what he wants. It's all about you, princess. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to a Rattledge and Broadcasting premiere podcast. We're all doing hand jive now. Damn you, Hollywood. And here's your host, Robert Winfrey. Yay!
All right, everybody. We're all on one tonight, so you've been warned.
That is wildly distracting because I'm doing all this and you're all like voguing down here and I'm looking at Alexis is like trying to land a plane. I don't know what you were doing, but Zach is good to his mother. Everyone's just waving hands. It's very distracting.
Look, your inability to hold attention is not our problem, sir.
Fair.
You should be the Rock. You need to be able to do this the same way every time as Leslie Nielsen tells everyone, move along, people. There's nothing to see here in front of the fireworks factory blowing up. That's your job.
I said to a room full of people I work with several times, I just want to let you know we're all counting on you. And they all said back to me, well, thanks. That's really helpful. But why are you counting on us? And I was like, ugh, you uncultured swines, you children.
Yes, that's.
Then I had to explain what Airplane was. Then I had to explain what parody was. Then I had to explain what movies were. And then I had to walk into traffic. Hey, Robert, tell people what we're doing tonight and who's doing it with us.
Well, tonight, everyone, we'll have a short review, hopefully, because there's not a lot to talk about. We're talking about Kung Fu Panda 4. And you know what? I'm just grateful they didn't make it Pan Forda.
Pandemonium.
It's like, can we all just appreciate and pray to God that that trend disappears and never comes back?
God, I hope so. Hey, Robert, who are the monkeys that are with us tonight?
Well, we've got Alexis Haina back with us for the first time in a couple of weeks. Alexis, how you doing?
Doing good. How do you like the hair color?
Very nice.
Blue.
It's a lovely shade of blue, Smurfette.
Actually, it's kind of hard to tell on the video, but my stylist, she actually designed it to look like Starry Night. There's actually shades of yellow and green in there as well.
Oh, that's adorable. Oh,
that's cool.
I will resist the urge to call you Bulma. Also joining us is Zachary Strobel.
There are worse characters to be compared to.
Much.
All right. Well, I'm going to put this on screen because Derp, we have an audience tonight, a fairly sizable one for this podcast. And one of those people is Derpy Entertainment, who has a thing to say about a thing that we saw. But I'll tell you what, you said that we are reviewing Kung Fu Panda 4, which, as we all know, is a 2024 American animated martial arts comedy film produced by DreamWorks Animation and distributed by Universal. It is the fourth installment in the Kung Fu Panda franchise and the sequel to Kung Fu Panda 3 from 2016.
Would have been awkward if it was the sequel to 2.
Which we did review here on Damn You Hollywood way back in the day. The film was directed by Mike Mitchell, co-directed by Stephanie Mastein, written by Darren Lemke, and the writing team of Jonathan Abel and Glenn Berger, and produced by Rebecca Huntley. It features Jack Black, Dustin Hoffman, James Hong, Bryan Cranston, and Ian McShane reprising their roles from the previous films with Awkwafina.
Oh, wait, hold on one second, Mark.
Oh, my God. Can I not get through an intro, yo? What the hell, man?
I can actually summarize the first movie in song.
Only if you hold up your eyes.
Okay. It's about a big fat panda and he knows kung fu. He'll just squeeze your pinky and he'll say skidoo. When you get the dragon scroll, I don't know when. We'll have a good time, yeah.
I swear to God, I thought that was going to go, we'll have a good time, yen. By the way.
Oh, I should have done that. Thank you.
Normally, I don't appreciate people biting on my rhymes or stealing my gimmick, but Zachary, you're a good boy who's good to his mother, and you can sing on this podcast anytime you want.
Thank you.
darker marker, babe. Darker marker, so people
my
can see.
My pen is dying. I was doing what I could without having
so
to get up.
So is my will to live. You don't hear me crying about it, and people can see it visibly. Now, listen.
Actually, I didn't think I was going to need to write that, okay? Next, I will come prepared with like my entire art supplies case, okay? I'll have all my acrylics and pastels set out.
That would be
and Mark, I hear a lot about your diminishing will to live, so please don't lie about that.
You know what's fun? And then we can get into this franchise and then the plot synopsis, because people are watching it, but I'm sure would like us to get on with this. But you know what's fun? To take your easily embarrassed, as they all are, 13-year-old daughter and chase her around the lobby of the local AMC near you. It doesn't have to be an AMC, but it can be. And do one of these maneuvers. Everybody was kung fu fighting wrong.
Okay, you're doing it wrong.
I would have rather heard that song than hearing Jack Black sing Hit Me Baby one more time.
Oh, fuck that. I was going to talk about that in the craft review. My daughter and I were rocking out to it. Both of us rocking out with our cocks out. You know what I'm saying, Zach?
Yeah, I was with my sister and she was like, can we leave? I'm like, after the song. Because I always make my sister stay after the credits. I'm like,
right.
When Mr. Black is done, we will leave.
Right. So okay, you and your sister were rocking out with your cocks out, right, Zach?
Admittedly, it is hard to knock Jack Black because Robert will understand this reference. That man is the bard that every party deserves.
So how was I doing it? How was I doing it wrong, Robert? Please correct me in my racism.
Okay, I was reminded of this recently watching an old episode of WrestleMania where, bless him, Paul Orndorff did this at Mr. Fuji. Are doing this with the eyebrows.
Yeah.
You okay. Grab here and you pull.
All right, I was doing it very quickly with earphones on, but the whole point was I was doing a racism in public, and my daughter, she threw a paper bag over her head, and she went, I'm so ashamed.
Yeah, that's right.
Sorry we don't have Mickey Rooney here to show us how to do racism properly.
That is true. The godfather of Yellowface, Mickey Rooney.
Speaking of Yellowface, Kung Fu Panda.
wherein a fat white man voices a panda.
Yes, sir.
From China.
So I vaguely remember this franchise, guys. Let's kick it around for a few minutes for TikTok purposes. I think this has been, it's one of the few animated movies we did in the long streak of movies we were doing on Damn You Hollywood and Long Road to Ruin. Like, we did the Madagascar franchise. We did only the third version of this. We did, I think, at least one of the How to Train Your Dragons. I think, you know, DreamWorks puts out a fairly solid, had put out a pretty solid product over the years.
DreamWorks is kind of the reason we stopped doing a lot of animated movies.
Right.
Because it's like, oh, okay, here's my review. Thumb right in the middle.
Yeah, like these were perfectly serviceable kids' films.
They do have an occasional just hit the ball right out of the park. I know a lot of us saw Puss in Boots, The Last Wish and raved about it.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because it was in the back of my mind because I know you saw it, you talked about it, especially with the Oscar nominated stuff last year, Alexis, and I hadn't seen it, but I remembered your review of that. And I thought me and Alexis are going to have a quick conversation about like how the quality of DreamWorks has improved over the years, because this was not quite Puss in Boots level, but it was definitely in terms of just strictly the animated, the animation style and techniques they were using. It was good stuff. They really put time and care, I think, into the presentation of this product, if nothing else. Zach, you look here, but you're chomping at the bit here to get in on this Kung Fu Panda discussion.
Yes, I do. Kung Fu Panda. That was my
please tell me you have more.
I have I have more.
Alexis, point that the other direction. There you go.
For the record, I'd actually like to get a basis on this because we're talking about how this movie is not at Puss in Boots level. What would you guys say is the apex of DreamWorks Animation? Would it be the first How to Train Your Dragon, Puss in Boots The Last Wish, first Shrek movie, perhaps?
Don't make me be the hipster. I'll make the hipster pick, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
What's the hipster pick?
Yeah, what's the
hipster pick? Road to El Dorado.
Oh, that's a good one.
That okay, is okay, no. Okay, rephrase. CGI.
Oh, okay.
Because no, Road El Dorado is absolutely one of my favorites, but
knowing most of the product,
it deserves to be in a different category.
Second Puss in Boots movie, the one from a year or so ago.
Yeah, wow. Last Wish is.
I could hear what you said.
High watermark.
Shrek 2.
Okay. So getting back to Kung Fu Panda, I remember the first one being pretty solid. It was, you know, the lowly schlub eating dumplings. Trains to be the kung fu master and takes on, you know, the big strong heel. It was like pro wrestling storyline. And obviously I think all of these have done financially substantially well. Alexis, what do you think of the first Kung Fu Panda?
It's interesting because on paper you would say this sounds like the dumbest thing in the world. Jack Black, first of all, especially for those who had previously seen Jack Black's contribution to DreamWorks doing a voice in Shark's Tale. The movie needs to be forgotten.
Yeah, that's at the low end of DreamWorks. I'm saying you're praising DreamWorks. I tend to forget the Shark's Tale.
Yeah, Shark's Tale and Shrek 3 all go at the bottom of the pit.
Yeah,
and the first Puss in Boots movie, lest we forget that abomination.
Yeah, the one with the what was it? Was it Humpty Dumpty?
Alexander Dumpty.
I can't believe you actually remember that detail, Zach.
One thing I remember about that movie.
No, the first, okay, again, on paper, that's the Kung Fu Panda franchise sounds like it would be just completely Dune-filled. It sounds so stupid, but it really sells. Gorgeous animation, great storytelling, and Jack Black really putting his all in giving a great characterization to Poe.
Yeah.
You know, he's, you want, again, going in, if you're cynical at all, you want to think that you're going to hate this character, but you love him, and I give all of that to how Jack Black brings this performance.
What I love about the Kung Fu Panda franchise is the Poe character, in that he's relatable in this sense where, you know, he doesn't look like the hero. But he uses what he does have to his advantage. And he's taught, you know, accept himself the way that he is, but take that self and make it the best that he can, which I like. You know, I love the fact that, I know it's like a silly line, it's a nonsense word and all that, but when he, at the end of the, I think it's the first movie where he does the belly bump and yells skadoosh, you know, and it wins the day with that.
He does a belly bump with skadoosh, but close
enough. Yeah, sorry. But my point is, it was like, oh, that's, it was a nice message for the kids. It's one of those where DreamWorks isn't quite Illumination, where it's really intelligently written, but it's also, you know, there's a lot there for the adults and for the kids. Not quite that level. But it's also not some of the dumber things we've seen with the other animation studios where, like, this is just, there's nothing here for adults. DreamWorks, I think, does a really good job of hitting a pitch where both adults and kids can enjoy it. I mean, you know, Pixar at its height was the best. But I would say for a little while there, it was a horse race, Robert, between when Pixar was on its streak and when DreamWorks was putting out a pretty consistent product, Kung Fu Panda being one of those.
Yeah, it's up there. The first Kung Fu Panda it's bolstered by a handful of things. First of all, it's well written. This is not like, it's not, you know, the best thing in the world writing wise, but it's well written. All the characters are well crafted and well realized. You know, you understand why Master Sifu is the way he is. You understand Poe's loving fanboyism.
Mm-hmm.
You understand your villain. You know, and it all kind of comes together into a more cohesive thing. And there's a nice little emotional undercurrent. Two expands on that pretty decently. You have another great villain. Gary Oldman, bless him, as Lord Shen, is tremendous.
Yeah.
Too bad they couldn't afford to bring him back for this one.
Yeah. There's that. And three is, I'm going to disagree with Derpy there. I think 3 has issues. We reviewed it.
Yeah.
There's some issues there, not the least of which is actually kind of the villain, because I love J.K. Simmons, and they didn't give him much to do other than have him show up at the beginning in the afterlife.
Oh, God, I remember that. That was like our big criticism of that movie was, like, this. It's too focused on Poe and not focused on the villain at all. It's kind of like a video game boss at the end.
Yeah, it's like if you have J.K. Simmons, you use J.K. Simmons.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, he's an amazing voice actor, too. I love hearing him do voice work.
But 3 at least also had this. It's big, like, bolstering point was the emotional story of Poe finding out I'm not the last panda.
Yes.
You know, I have other people. These are people like me. And, you know, I've got people who care about me and who try to work with me. But they don't understand the impulse to just roll everywhere and eat until you're blue in the face. And
I think another
new panda things.
I think another thing that I liked about the first 3 Kung Fu Panda movies that didn't quite carry over into this one. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have a lot of high praise for this one. I have a lot of nice things to say about it. But there were certain things about it I'm going to pick at and criticize. And one of those things was these Kung Fu Panda movies were not just about, you know, the training and rising and action stuff of a martial artist. It was about family. It was about, you know, finding one's true self. It was about being all you can be, all of that good stuff. It was not as focused, especially after the first one. It was not as focused on doing the moves as such. It wasn't as focused on the Kung Fu and Kung Fu Panda. And this fourth one, you can tell this wasn't directed by the people that, you know, or wasn't worked on by the same production people that did the first 3, because this one feels again like one of those movies where they don't know why the first 3 worked. So they made this fourth one, and they do the things they think are popular that people will like. And it's like, oh, this is not quite what this series is supposed to be about. I'm going to give you the last word here, Zach. Everybody will go around the horn one more time about this franchise, and then we'll get into the plot. Anything else about the first 3 movies that you wanted to talk about?
They're good. I like them. The problem with me is they're not very memorable. I remember liking them. I remember 1 was really good. I thought 2 was even better. 3, I have, like, no memory, except that I don't remember anything about 3. But I do remember enjoying it, and I enjoyed this one pretty well. I do have some issues, but it's not my favorite series, not even really my favorite DreamWorks series, but it's one of those movies where it's like I never like to sit down and watch, but like if I watch, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember liking this.
Yeah, it's one of those where if I walked in the room and there's children watching it, and I'm kind of forced to, you know, to sit and watch with them while I'm waiting on someone, I wouldn't want to throw myself out the living room window. Speaking
it's
of throwing
of the movie, it's kind of the movie you hope is playing in the waiting room of the dentist's office.
Yeah, very much so.
All right, Robert, if you got anything else about the franchise before we move into the fourth one, hit it. Otherwise, give me that sweet, sexy plot synopsis in 50 words or less. Ooh, we got people watching. Make it snappy.
Pretty easy here. So we open with Poe being told, you're no longer going to be the Dragon Warrior. You need to become the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace. Jack Black goes, I don't want to be a serious actor. I want to make stupid movies.
Yeah, then put the pie in a horse's ass. Keep going, Robert.
Like, I don't want to do Oscar bait. I want to go voice Bowser again.
Peace.
And Dustin Hoffman takes him by the ear and goes, listen, you. You're going to pick your successor, and that's that. And so Jack Black refuses to pick his successor because there's no one worthy of taking the crown of comedian, musician, big personality at the moment. It will still be me, and we'll do another Tenacious D movie, I promise. And then Awkwafina shows up, and everything gets worse.
That's going to be on your tombstone. Here lies Robert Winfrey, podcaster, loving brother, loving son. And he hated Awkwafina, and every time she showed up, it made things worse.
You know, I can't wait for 2 years from now when we all look back and go, "Hey, remember that 18 months when we tried to make Awkwafina a thing? Boy, that was stupid."
Go ahead,
Alexa. You know, I've seen Awkwafina in some live action roles. She's not a terrible actress. She actually has the chops.
This is one of Robert's fucking picadillos where he can't get out of his own way on this one. He's like, that's it. I'm taking it to the grave.
No, like, and here's my thing. I have nothing against Awkwafina as an actress. Like I said, I've seen her play some live action roles and actually do a really good job with it.
Sure.
I think she's got talent, but I want to know why she has essentially just delegated herself to doing these voiceover roles where she's not given any kind of challenge or whatever. It's just Awkwafina being quippy. This was her in The Bad Guys. This was her in Migration. It's like, okay, yes, we know you can do it, but we know you could do better than this. Please branch out.
I have an answer for you. The low-hanging simple answer is she's an actress. These are gigs. But I want to point to somebody who's sort of like the icon of this idea. And I know about this because, I mean, it seems obvious, like, but if you actually look, it's so much bigger than you think it is. So I was doing research and setting up shows next year for Black History Month for me and Jason, and I was looking at Samuel Jackson's filmography. First of all, time split on me. I'm still there doing it. Second of all,
it's big.
Yeah, it's so big. He's been in like a zillion movies, big and small. Some have been he's been the star. Some he's been a supporting cast. A lot of voice roles. He's done everything everywhere. That man has not said no to a movie ever. And I was reading about like part of the reason why he does it. He was just like, because I'm an actor and I was offered a job, and Hollywood is lazy. Hollywood is inherently lazy. They think that there's not a lot of thought put into role and who should fill it. And so when something works, people just keep doing it. And Awkwafina works as a voice actress.
There's a very few amount of people who put that much thought into it, but in general, you're right.
This is why Chris Pratt is also Garfield and Mario and Robert Winfrey the movie and everything, because it's like it worked like once or twice, and now it's like, oh, well, Chris Pratt's a good leading man for animated roles. Let's just keep doing this. Again, not a lot of creativity in Hollywood. Keep going, Robert.
So Awkwafina shows up as Jin, the Fennec Fox. And she steals from the Valley of Peace, and Poe stops her and is like, no, I'm the Dragon Warrior. And she goes, what's that? He goes, come on, man, I'm famous.
Kung Fu Panda 1, Kung Fu Panda 2.
Come on, Star Lord, Legendary Adventurer. Who? Yeah, keep going.
So she gets thrown in jail, but then makes an offer like, hey, I'm trying to stop this evil shape-shifting monster. A sorceress. And it's Amanda Waller. Sorry, I mean Viola Davis. I mean, she is the chameleon, and she actually showed up early and pretended to be Tai Lung and scared a bunch of poor mountain sheep into giving her all their iron. And he's like, well, fine, I'll go stop the chameleon then. That's something the Dragon Warrior does. And Dustin Hoffman chases after him as he runs away going, I'm going on an adventure. And Dustin Hoffman is shaking his fist going, oh, you...
My cabbages.
I still love the light. It's like, tell my dads I love them. I can't hear you.
So real quick, Alexis, I'm breaking my own rule here, but real quick. So I listened to your Avatar review. By the way, you did a good job. Second of all, you treated my son with the respect he fucking deserves. Anyway, just kidding. But a couple of times throughout this movie, because I'd heard him talk about the cabbages thing. So there's a couple of gags where they fall on a cart of some sort of fruit or whatever. And I nudge myself.
For the record, hang on. Yeah. It's durian fruit, which is the worst smelling fruit in the world.
So they do that.
There's actually cultures that use it as a meat substitute. You can't.
It has all kinds of one. It actually doesn't taste bad. It just smells awful.
Oh yeah.
So speaking of smelling awful, so they do a gag where he falls on the cart two or three times throughout the movie, and each time I looked at Jones and went, my cabbages! And
I giggled. Almost said that out loud in the theater the second time it happened.
Likewise. Yeah, I was just like, you guys, I was sitting there, it's like, somebody wanted that to be a thing of cabbages. So there was an animator who was like, okay, I know it's durians, but hear me out. What if it's cabbages? Just like, shut up with the cabbages, Mark. You know, somebody.
I like how it's Mark. Thanks. All right. Keep going, Robert.
So Jin and Poe head out, and Jin is a conniving
jerk.
Bit of a jerk.
Ne'er-do-well.
Very suspicious.
For the record, she's a Corsac fox, not a Fennec fox.
Corsac fox. Oh, my God, nerds.
Hey, I'll accept that. I actually didn't know Shifu was supposed to be a red panda. Worst red panda ever.
Keep going.
You can't see his full body. You can't see the red body because of his clothing.
He didn't have the right tail.
You're on the wrong website.
Anyway, they head off towards Juniper City, where the chameleon operates out of. And the chameleon is, again, evil, shape-shifting sorceress who rules this place with an iron fist and squeezes all of the other illegal crime families for a percentage of all their takes.
I was getting Joker vibes from The Dark Knight.
Not the vibe I got, but fair enough. Along the way, they stop at the Happy Bunny Tavern for a side quest, wherein a bunch of rabbits are being bullied by cutthroats, and they wreck the place, and they get on a boat with a fish that's in the mouth of a pelican, and he sails them across the base. He sails them across Lake Superior, because it's a big lake. And they arrive at the city, and as they're doing this, our B-plot, which doesn't matter at all, is Bryan Cranston and James Hong road-tripping to follow Poe.
Hey, no insulting James Hong, okay? That man is a legend.
I have nothing against James Hong.
No, it's the stupid B-plot, which I'm in total agreement with. It was somebody's like, hey, you know what this thing needs? A My Two Dads plot. Like, well, what are they going to do? B2 Dads. Right.
So they're following because they're worried about Poe.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to things that matter. So the chameleon's plan is to open up the gate to the spirit world and then steal the kung fu from all the great masters who have died. And this is what she wants to do, and she has to do it under the blood moon. Because why not?
Doesn't she admit at one point, it's like, you know what, it's just for theatrics. I don't really need it.
It was a funny gag. It was like, they do the thing where she's waiting for the moon to come overhead and it just keeps staying still. She's like, oh, fuck it. It was just for effect anyway.
So they arrive in the city and Jin is a wanted criminal. So they get chased by the water buffalo. They escape and they find Kehyun Kwan in pangolin form and all the cutthroats in the underbelly. And they... Poe tries to dispense wisdom because he's supposed to be becoming a spiritual leader. And they take the wrong lessons, but we get to the right point. So they're not murdered by violent bunny children.
That's one hell of a way to go.
Cannibal rabbits.
I once saw cannibal rabbits open up for Metallica in 1989 at the Nassau Coliseum. Keep going, Robert.
I'm sure you did. So they break into the chameleon's place. We've learned a little bit about Jin, how she used to be a street urchin and was taken in by a mysterious person. It couldn't possibly be the big bad evil guy, right? We infiltrate the chameleon's mansion, the chameleon's palace. They get by a few traps. Poe gets stuck in a magic metal prison. He hands Jin the staff because the staff can only, you can't steal it and have its power. It has to be willingly given. It's one of its properties. He willingly gives the staff to Jin, who then gives it to the chameleon because, shock, it was her.
It was me, though. Hang on. We haven't done this one in a while.
It was all me, James. It's always been me, the author of all your pain.
I haven't used that button in a dog's age.
It's been a bit. Poe escapes, because of course he does. But the chameleon starts opening. She opens the gate to the spirit world. She pulls out Tai Lung, and Tai Lung goes, what are you doing here? She goes,
the actor they can afford.
Yes.
I'm the only voice actor from the past that's willing to do this gig again. So here's Tai Lung. And she sucks all of his kung fu out with her tongue.
I can't tell you if I had a nickel for every time a kung fu was sucked out with some girl's tongue.
Ooh. I'd have two, but it's weird that it's happened twice.
Cha-ching, bang, bang.
Sorry, that's a more obscure reference than you'll get, Mark.
No, I got it. Also, Cooper says it all the time. Can we?
So she starts summoning all these old defeated. We get cameos from everybody. Not voice cameos, visual cameos from all the guys who've been defeated in the past. As the chameleon takes their power and Poe nearly dies. He falls off a thing. But he's saved by his dad, so he starts coming back up to fight, and Jin has realized the error of her ways, like you do. And she tries to stop Poe from fighting the chameleon because you can't stop her. She's too powerful. And Poe goes, this is kind of what I do. It's my thing. And if I don't, she'll raise hell all the way through to the Valley of Peace, and I can't let that happen to my people.
Yes, possibly Kung Fu Panda 5.
She will set the Shire on fire.
Yeah. So he goes to confront the chameleon, and he's like, give me back the staff. And she goes, okay, here. I've gotten everything I need out of this thing. Now I shapeshift through all the greatest hits of your villains, and we fight. And I even turn into you at one point, and it's kind of funny. And then I turn into this monstrosity, vaguely reminiscent of the Queen Alien, and it's meant to be horrifying. And we fly around, and there's more fighting. And eventually I trap Poe in the in another ball of iron, and Poe gives the staff to Jin and says, you go be the dragon warrior now. And she goes, oh, okay. So she then beats the chameleon, and then Poe gets out of the cage on his own and goes, hey, good job, buddy. Wait, you could have gotten out of there the whole time. Yeah, but, you know, dramatic stuff.
You needed to ascend, my Padawan.
Then he gets the staff and finally fully defeats the chameleon. Tai Lung has showed up for a little bit of this, and he then expresses, you know what, good job, Poe. Maybe you were the right one to be the dragon warrior. I get character growth 3 movies later, after I'm dead, because we needed something here.
I refuse to. Okay, I can accept Tai Lung accepting peace and going back to the spirit world. I refuse to believe that Gary Oldman's character, J.K. Simmons' character, or any of the, it's like, really, they're all okay with this?
Yeah, Shen, no.
I'm not going to knock you guys with that. I'm not going to knock you guys for that particular nitpick, because you're probably not wrong, but it's also a 90-minute children's movie. The kids have to leave the mall now. So we're not focusing on characters that are not really in the movie.
So everyone goes to
the movie.
Everyone goes to the spirit world. Poe takes Jin back to the Valley of Peace and says, she's the dragon warrior now. She needs to start training. And Dustin Hoffman goes, really? You had all these great candidates, and you picked the one, you found her stealing your hubcaps. What are you doing here? This ends badly.
Yes, it ends in a warehouse with a Joker beating you with a crowbar.
Yes.
Okay, good. We all got that reference.
But it was for the people, Alexis. It was for the people.
So we
guess what? Your votes be damned. They brought him back anyway.
Ugh, yeah, comic books are for dummies. Keep going, Robert.
So Master Sifu now returns to trying to find inner peace, which he kind of did at the end of the first one, but hey, we need the gag. So we see him trying to meditate as there are now 3 peach trees going. You see, there was the one that was Oogway's, the big old wise tortoise. Then in the first one, trying to make a point about control, Dustin Hoffman planted a peach seed and then was told, no, you're wound too tight, buddy. We gotta relax you a little bit. You'll figure it out. And that one started to grow, and it's actually a decent size at this point. And we see the little one growing because that's Poe trying to become a spiritual leader. And oh, isn't that sweet?
You know what? I actually love that post-credits ending in the first one where they show the peach tree starting to bloom. Like, that was a really good way to end that movie.
It was. And then again, Jin starts being trained by the rest of the Furious 5. No voices, because again, we're on a budget here, people. So
I think Seth Rogen came back.
Oh, you know we're getting a Netflix miniseries with those 5 because they mentioned that they were off doing their... I don't remember all of them. I remember something about Viper was negotiating a peace treaty and something about Mantis getting married and trying to keep his bride from eating his own head, eating his head. Yuck, yuck, if you know about how praying mantis is made.
And marriage.
And the minute I watched him, like, translation...
Crane became king of the crocodiles.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I just thought it's like translation. Netflix is currently negotiating for a 5-part miniseries.
Pretty much.
All right, Zachary Strobel, what did you think of this movie? This movie in particular?
Well, the thing is...
Oh, boy.
Honestly, this movie... I'll give you my short answer. I liked it. My long answer was... It's one of those movies where it's like... Like, you'd think, like, they had a really good trilogy, and then they're like, it's not like they're trying to top it. They're just like, we can make another one. And it just seems like it seems to be a trend.
You're making the Toy Story argument where it ends purposely, and then we had to do Toy Story 4 and ruin the whole goddamn thing. And now we're getting Toy Story 5 because Disney completely out of ideas. Keep going, Zach.
Exactly. Because this is like, the last one came out like 8 years ago. I mean,
yeah.
And it doesn't seem like it ends. It doesn't seem like that one wrapped things up. I feel like this one just like there's room for more, but it's like, but I mean, this is like the best movie you could have within those limits.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoyed it. It wasn't as deep or philosophical.
It almost comes across like this was greenlit to be direct to streaming. Yeah. And when that boat crashed into the iceberg and killed everybody aboard except for, except for what's her nuts. That would have been funny if I could remember the actress's name.
He's in everything.
Kate Winslet, yes. They were like, well, nothing goes to streaming anymore because that's going to bankrupt us. And then they threw this made-for-TV movie onto the big screen as best they could.
Exactly, as one does. And it is, I thought it was good. I mean, everyone brings their A game. I mean, it's like, if we're going to make a movie that is like, doesn't need to exist, at least it seems like everyone has fun. Like Jack Black has fun. Awkwafina has fun. Mr. Beast has fun for his one line that he heavily promoted. I mean, it was good, but it also with the animation, I feel like they did the thing in like Migration, which we brought about, where it's like, if it's far away, let's put it out of focus. Like, we need to render the whole world. It's not like we're putting this on a big screen. Oh, wait, yes, we are. And I don't know. I feel like that. I mean, it was, I think like 80% of the jokes got a laugh from me. I mean, they were funny. The timing, everyone had really good comedic timing. I thought it was a good movie. Can't really think of too much other to say. I mean, it was serviceable. I thought it was standard and serviceable, but no way bad movie. Just,
Let me say this before I throw it over to Alexis, and who definitely want to hear what you have to say. But I want to throw this out there. I wasn't intending to review this movie for the same reasons that Robert and I talked about, which is we've done a lot of these already, and I don't really want to. I don't want to take 2 hours of people's time away from their families and my own just to sit here and go, yeah, it was all right. Plugs, everyone. You know, let's just bullshit for 2 hours because we have nothing to say about this movie. Like, some of this stuff just doesn't really demand the 2 hour Damn You Hollywood experience, but like, we have you now, and you know, Alexis likes to talk about animation. There's elements of it that she can speak to intelligently. So I'm up for it, and I'm here for it. I was bored for the first fucking act of this thing. Like, everything up to the point that they get to the inn at the end of the universe, I was like half asleep, and not even because I was tired. I was bored to shit. And I was like, ugh, I hate Zach and Alexis for making me do this. But yeah. It's a night out with my children, so it doesn't matter. But everything after that I was really into, and I was like surprised at how much I enjoyed the movie. And I swear to God, there's at least a handful of times I'm the only one laughing in the theater. Some of this stuff really hit me in the funny bone, like out of nowhere. That said, and I'll come back to my craft criticisms in a moment. Alexis, honey, baby, sweetie, Judy Pie, what did you think of this potential Oscar and nominated phenomenon?
Well, glad Zachary pointed out the Toy Story argument, because there is a lot to say about this. This movie, it's not terrible. There's no parts of this that I openly said like, oh god, shoot me now. I mean, there was a couple of jokes I didn't like. The one where, I mean, the boat captain being the fish in the pelican's mouth made me laugh, but yeah. Then he see him drinking and go, whoa, this guy drinks like a fish. I was like, ow.
It's like, should he be driving?
That's like a joke Zachary, right?
Yeah, there was a handful of puns.
Ronnie Chang cracked me the fuck up. I'm not the world's biggest fan of The Daily Show, but I'll watch his clips on TikTok, and he's the highlight of that show for me. Keep going.
Yeah, no, I thought he was funny too. No, everyone did bring their A game as far as voice acting. A couple of jokes really made me laugh. I laughed really hard at the scene where they passed through the China shop in June.
Yeah, that was fun stuff. Didn't they do that in Zootopia though?
Probably. That
same gag.
I can't remember.
Because I feel like it's also like the cops, like they're like water buffalo. Well, they had every big animal there was to have in Zootopia, but I swear to God, I've seen that gag before.
It always reminds me of the way they did the bull in the China shop joke on that episode of Family Guy. One of the few good Family Guy jokes.
Okay.
Sorry, I stand by it.
Sorry, yeah, Mrs. Winfrey. Keep going.
It was the earlier seasons where they were still trying.
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah,
Seth MacFarlane clearly abandoned that after like the fourth season.
But no, yeah, the scene with the bull, everything it breaks with the bull in the China shop with the autocraft, it goes, I know what you're thinking. So that's kind of what it reminded me of.
Right.
But this, I guess one of the things I felt like is that the first three Kung Fu Panda movies felt like they were really good family entertainment. Yeah. A movie, you know, parents and the kids and everyone would all enjoy and have fun. This one seemed like it was geared more towards younger kids. There was a lot more silliness, a lot mm-hmm. more jokes like that I felt were aiming at a younger audience. And I felt that a lot of the parents were not going to be having as much fun as they would have. It just really felt like they weren't trying as hard.
This clocks in at 94 minutes. It is the definition of lean. Get the kids to the mall and let's get this shit on the road. Like, it was as if the movie looked at the audience and goes, this is for kids and for parents to put on for kids while they do the laundry. We do not have long attention spans. Let's go.
What I said before when we talked about how if this premise, the Kung Fu Panda premise was written on paper, you would say, oh my God, this is going to suck. It feels like this is the movie we thought we would have gotten with that premise.
Yeah.
It really feels like it just feels like there is no real effort to this. And yeah. I know obviously we could say like, well, why did they make this? Yeah, we know why they made it. Money. But it feels soulless. It feels like a very soulless film. I give credit to Jack Black and Awkwafina and all of them for trying. Viola Davis even, I don't think I've ever heard her do a lot of the same character
from the new Hunger Games movie.
she's basically sleepwalking through this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, she's got a couple of funny lines. I love, again, we talked about it. It's like, love, but it's like, hey, you know, that the blood moon's just for theatrics. I don't need it. It's like, that was a funny scene, but I don't feel like there was a lot of real character.
No. When your villainous origin is, I really wanted to learn Kung Fu, but everyone looked down on me in a world where a praying mantis is a Kung Fu master that does not hold water.
It was very Mulan-ish, I think, right? They were playing on the idea of it. I might even not have the right movie. It was some other one where it was like the girl wants to learn karate and can't, and you know, has to dress as a boy to learn it.
The new Karate Kid, I might be what you're talking about.
Maybe.
I thought you were thinking more about something. Hidden Dragon?
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon?
Yeah. Yeah, because there's a big
I might have been, but it's been so long since I've seen that. I don't know if that's what I'm talking about. There's something that we've talked about where it's a young girl who wants to learn martial arts but can't because she's a girl, and so she dresses as a boy to do it. It kind of like that's the riff they were going on.
Well, either way, Viola Davis is a great actress, and I know that she can't allow herself to give a bad performance in this besides the whole Woman King thing, but it really feels like she was just like, okay, done, give me my paycheck.
I like this movie a lot from the point of all the stuff in the end made me laugh. Ronnie Chang cracked me up as the fish in the pelican. The stuff about like, first of all, why you would build the inn on the tip of a rock, if for only the use of that gag of trying to keep balance for the whole thing tips over. I laughed at all of it. It was sort of on the nose, obvious humor. But you know who thought it was great? The kids around me who apparently never seen a movie before. So all that stuff, like, that's what I had to keep in mind. Like, I just did an Oscar podcast. This isn't for me. So put yourself in the we barely go to the movies brain and just enjoy the pretty colors and the jingling keys. And the thing of it was, is it was just better than that, in my opinion. I think a lot of the thematic stuff worked well for me. I like the My Two Dad stuff. I mean, yeah, their plot is stupid, but you know, the idea of like, we're both his dad, we're both in this room, we want to keep him safe. And then him, you know, like, I'm a fucking dragon warrior. I really don't need to be mommy coddled. Like, I like all that stuff. There's little interpersonal things that the writers clearly kept in mind that you can't do too much of it because then you lose the kids. But there was just enough there for me because I don't give a shit about the fighting, and that's what the kids are there for. So I'm kind of looking for personal drama, you know, interpersonal stuff with the characters. And there was enough there to keep me interested. Again, it's not Poor Things, but not everything has to be. Not Oscar winning Poor Things, thank you very much.
Ruffalo can't stop corpsing, looking directly into the camera.
Also, I like how I take credit for Poor Things. I just like the movie. Like, I act like I made the damn thing. Anyway, I enjoyed the animation style. This is what I really wanted to talk about because I remember seeing clips of and I remember you guys talking about Last Wish and like the changes in texture that were on screen. the sort of like wiping, and then you'd get this other kind of animation style. I thought that was interesting. I think that's like the least laziest thing about this movie, is they at least went for a visual presentation and aesthetic that was dynamic. And it was, you know, where it was very easy to have just left this thing in one animation style all the way through and do nothing with it. They're like, good enough for government work. They didn't do that. They put effort into that part of it. They didn't put effort into anything else. They at least did that much. So I thought that was good. I think the, you know, again, the villain's plot of, and this is the, like, my biggest criticism of this movie. This is a rock stupid plot. Like, even dumber than the usual kids film. Otherwise, I wouldn't call it out. Because most kids plots are kind of dumb. But this one was especially stupid. And again, this is what I mean by it focuses a little too much on the Kung Fu and not enough on everything else that made Kung Fu Panda great. You know, the greatness of a movie is you have a background, you have a setting, you have a style, but that's not what the movie's about. The movie's about friendship, or the movie's about, you know, family, yada, yada, yada. It's the theme that, you know, the theme is the thing. Please don't yell shut up at me, Robert. it's like, but the themes for Barbie, shut up. Here at my sleep now. But themes are important. And they certainly draw me into a movie. And this, while it had them, like, the major motivating factor for this villain was, I want all the kung fu so that I have all your moves so that I can defeat you and then lobster. But for the 18 people watching, that's a Eddie Izzard joke. You know, it's like he goes this long explanation of a plot and then goes lobster. So it's a common thing we say here. That's kind of it. It was to use another phrase from another show, South Park. It was like phase one, get the phase one, collect underpants. Phase three, profit. Phase one,
yeah,
was
phase two.
Yeah, yeah. It was like you missed phase two. Like I'm gonna get all the kung fu and then I win. And then
so what's up with phase two? Phase three, profit.
Yeah, yeah. We understand her motivation. She wants all the kung fu so she wins, but then what does winning entail? When Thanos wins, half the universe dies and he feels satisfied with having corrected the math of the universe. Okay, we get it. You know, and then he could fuck off into the woods to live deliberately, and he does.
I thought they were going to do sort of a you. I mean, they mentioned one line like, you haven't earned this, you're just stealing the moves. And I thought they were going to go into a whole, you have, it's like, you don't truly understand this because you haven't worked for it. You haven't learned what these moves truly mean. And, you know, the importance of, you know, the discipline of it. I thought they were going to pull that.
Well, it's like a little kid's interpretation of martial arts, that where it's just like, oh, it's just about, you know, kicks and punches. And you don't really understand what it is you're doing. You're just doing body movement. It's that shallow, Alexis. You know, again, so you can have a very simple motivation. Sauron wanted to take over Middle Earth and he was going to kill all the men to do it. Cool. Got it. We know why Sauron is doing what he's doing. Again, Thanos was correcting the math of the universe. Got it. We know why he's doing it. She's like, I want all the kung fu, but for why? To win. What does winning entail?
Potatoes.
And that's where the movie falls really, really flat for me. I liked Awkwafina in this. I don't have Robert's prejudice against her. I think she did a good enough job. I actually think, because Awkwafina tends to be a bit minstrelly in a lot of what she does here, she's subtlety works for her, and she's not over the top stupid and silly. The only other criticism I would have is her as the dragon warrior. I mean, Robert, you know, knows how the movie's going to end within the first 30 seconds of any movie ever. Me, I'm a little bit more surprised that the good guy won. And even here, I was like, 30 seconds into seeing her character, I'm like, oh, she's going to be the dragon warrior at the end. And so 30 seconds
into the trailer, you knew she was going to be the dragon warrior.
Yeah, they really fucking made it totally obvious. So, you know, for people watching, like, well, should I take my children? Yeah, absolutely. It's a fun time at the movies. My kids loved it.
Your 5-year-old will probably enjoy this.
Look, my 10-year-old, who, you know, who's now TikTok famous for his comments with my father about Dune 2, enjoyed it. And yeah, that's not 22,000 views on Conversations with Grandpa, by the way.
TikTok famous.
That's all.
I know why they call it TikTok.
Why do they call it TikTok, Zach?
Because it wastes all your time.
Are you hitting the button? I'll do it.
You know, Andrew Mark, Rosecoe got upset when he realized I've hosted a million shows with him, and then I've never used those sound effects clips with him.
That was just like, other than Jonas's rant about Sokka or Soko or whatever the hell his name is, the Sokka. The other really funny thing about that review was Jonas going, "I have the power of the buttons." Boy, that went to his head fast.
You can't give a 10-year-old power, man. You should know that.
Yeah,
but I still want to do the clip about Toph being played by a blind actress. I still say we should do that clip as well.
If you put the effort in, you can.
I'll get you the time codes. I will get you the time codes.
Sure, Robert. What did you think of this movie?
This is not a good movie. Look, will a certain demographic probably be entertained by it? Yeah, yeah. Are there individual pieces that are perfectly serviceable? Sure. Yeah, I chuckled once or twice, like, but as a movie, but as a movie, like, there's no cohesion. Yeah. There's no emotional core. There's no, when your feature presentation needs a B plot and arguably a C plot at different times to pad out the runtime because you just don't have anything here.
Yeah.
Like, that's a problem. See, this was a corporate mandated film. Like, they were going through the list.
Like, this was meant to be like an hour-long special on Peacock or something.
If that.
Yeah.
Like, there was probably somebody going like, okay, let me germinate on this idea for maybe something we can work for Kung Fu Panda. And then it kind of got like half-baked.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Robert.
It kind of got like half-finished and the writer went, you know, this isn't working. Let me put it aside, work on something else. And then 8 months later, some studio executive kicks in his office door all dramatic and goes, "It's been 7 years since we've had a Kung Fu Panda thing. We're dying here. Kung Fu Panda." And he just kind of, as this maniac is menacing him, he kind of, yeah, script, here, go.
Let me look. Shows him a picture of like David Zaslav. He says, "Do you want this? Do you want this?"
This is how we get Zaslav's.
There's 45 pages of his script, and they're reading through. It's like, what can we do to beef this up a bit? And someone just screamed, "Make it gayer!" And that's how we got the dad's plot.
Yes. And no, someone else went, "Okay, we can be a little bit racist because they're animals." So here's the pangolin.
Go ahead, Alexis.
I was going to say, it's interesting that it does feel like it was written for streaming only, because Kung Fu Panda's had a ton of straight to streaming specials. Yeah. And yep. I was reading a little bit more about some of the, again, you guys know me, I go to IMDb, I read about the trivia and a bunch of stuff. And there's all this stuff these people have put on there that they've ignored all of these characters and villains and whatnot that have appeared in the specials. I mean, one person who's even pointing out, it's like, why is Mr. Ling the goose, you know, talking about opening up a tofu shop? Didn't you see that one special on Netflix? He opened up a second shop already. It's like, where is that second shop? And just like it's like the specials apparently don't count.
Someone was fired for that blunder.
One would hope.
Keep going. Hey, we're gonna wrap. I want to hard out at an hour. So we're into the next segment at least.
So again, there's just the others, at least, you know, even Kung Fu Panda 3, which, you know, we reviewed and had some issues with, has a really nice emotional core to it. Like, the actual emotion for the characters.
Yeah, God, that's works. What's missing here, is that emotional core.
Yeah, it's absent. It's completely absent. It's just, it's a half-baked idea that feels like it got rushed badly during the early production phase. Because they were desperate to get another Kung Fu Panda movie out, because we have to do this every so often. Or the rights revert back to Jack Black and he's got a musical ready to go. I don't know.
I'm just watching that.
It's, again, the very young will be entertained by this, but that's about it. And this is probably the worst Kung Fu Panda movie. That being said, I hope this stays the worst, because this is still watchable, even if it's not very good.
There's nothing in this movie that is abysmal, horrible, shield your child's eyes.
Yeah, no. There's nothing quite that bad. It's
no, like I said, me and my kids walked out of it. We were having a fun conversation about it, but it's also like our memory of the movie lasted from the back door of the theater to the front door of my car. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
All right. So with my God, we actually got the craft review under an hour. I am impressed with us. Well done, everybody. Good job.
Helps when there's nothing to talk about.
Maybe that's the trick. All right. So for those of you, we have a fairly big audience tonight. And for those of you maybe watching for the first time, the next thing we do is talk about the finances of the film, the budgets and all of that. And we call that the money. Alrighty. On a budget of $85 million, this thing has made $81.7 million. So, I mean, we're off to a really, really good start.
It'll probably be okay.
Apparently, yeah. They want to do two Did more you? Movies.
Yeah, I saw that.
I think we're in the corner.
Why? We don't need another trilogy of Kung Fu Panda, please.
It didn't need this one either, but here we are.
No, it didn't.
Well, it doesn't help.
Apparently, it does.
Did Alexis freeze?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello?
All right, there you are. Were you saying, Alexis? It doesn't help, and then we lost you for a second.
Oh, that Jack Black said he'll continue to play Poe as long as DreamWorks wants him. He loves the role. And again, credit to him. He does a great job with it, so.
Yeah, and I'm fine with him saying, yes, I'll continue to voice the character, but Doug Bradley made some truly terrible Hellraiser movies too, just because he liked being Pinhead and wanted the check.
So one of the things I hate about modern entertainment internet news is the headline that goes, actor says she'd, or actor says he'd do whatever. You know, it's just like, oh, I'd be totally interested. So it's one of those, we talked about this when Solo came out, where they asked the guy from Atlanta who played Lando, Donald Glover, like, oh, do you think Lando's pansexual or some bullshit? And he was just like, whatever gets me out of this interview, man. And they were like, oh, the headline is Lando is pansexual. Well, fuck anything, including a robot. It's like these actors give perfectly good non-Rachel Zegler answers to stupid questions. And that becomes a headline in clickbait, and I hate it. It's like, yes, most actors will say, sure, I'd be willing to do that role. What are they going to say? What are they going to do? What Dakota Johnson is currently doing, which is not my favorite news piece going around, which she's just like, fuck Spider-Man, fuck Sony.
Dakota Johnson,
you are my heart.
My favorite reaction to that has been people who've like, oh, the studio executive talking points that have been leaked, they're like, we think this is going to come back to bite her here at Sony. Like, you guys are on fire. You real not in the good way.
Did you hear about how Sony is furious with Dakota Johnson because she's not taking ownership of how bad Man of Web? Apparently,
She's refusing to throw herself in front of the fucking train on this. And good for Dakota Johnson.
Yeah, none of this is like, I'm an actor. You want someone to throw themselves in front of the oncoming train for your studio? The director, the producers, the studio, like, no, I'm not taking a bullet for you people.
She's openly admitted that she thought she was setting up for a Marvel movie. She didn't realize this was a Sony piece of shit.
It doesn't matter.
She was almost certainly lied to.
But it wouldn't matter if she were in like the first Venom movie, which did gangbusters. We wouldn't be having this conversation.
Didn't do gangbusters.
Yes, it did. It was in the $700 million and it got a sequel, you psycho.
It made enough that we're getting Venom The Last Dance.
Yeah,
it wasn't in the top 10 that year. That's why I say it didn't do gangbusters.
I'm gonna double check your math on that. But
I'm pretty sure hang on. Look, it came out one of those years when there were like $5 billion movies.
So my point is, like, it doesn't matter whether it was a Marvel movie or not. What it matters was that it was a shit production. But again, the whole reason why I was starting to say I hate when the headlines are actor says I'm willing to do this role, actors, because what are they going to say? What is Jack Black going to say in front of a camera to an entertainment journalist? Fuck you, Universal Studios and DreamWorks. I'll never play the Poe again. Or I want to do Death of a Salesman. He's not going to do that. Like, he's going to give the crowd pleasing answer, because that's what these people do. They want to be liked. And good on them.
There are actors who have said that they want to move. There are actors who have said they want to move on. I mean, how many times did Robert Downey Jr. say that he was pretty much done with Iron Man? He's like, I think that we've done all we can with that character.
Every movie until his contract ran out.
Good point. Touche.
Moving on. So, as of March 10th, 2024, Kung Fu Panda has grossed $58 million in the U.S. and Canada and $23.7 million in other territories for a worldwide total of $81.7 million. Good little film. You're making a dollar.
Again, this isn't going to break the bank, but it'll probably be fine.
Yeah, it'll be profitable, I think.
It's nice to have a good family film in theaters, if nothing else.
Well, I think somebody said like there isn't going to be another one until Garfield. So, like, you know, the runway is clear. In the U.S. and Canada, Kung Fu Panda 4 was released alongside Imaginary and Cabrini. It was projected to gross $45 to $50 million from about 4,000 theaters in its opening weekend. It made $19.4 on its first day, $3.8 from Thursday night previews. It went on to debut $58 million, topping the box office, becoming the highest opening weekend for a DreamWorks animation film since Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted in 2012, which we reviewed on Long Road to Ruin. All right,
Robert, can we have a moment of congratulating ourselves that we didn't bring in the unholy Trinity to review Imaginary?
I can say we dodged that bullet, sure.
I don't like it when the girl puts her hand on the nail. That bothers me. Anyway, the number one movie of the weekend was, in fact, The Kung Fu Panda, which unseated my prediction of Dune repeating in its second week. So
on the plus side for Dune, though, only a 44% drop is a really strong hold, especially for a strong opening weekend, which it had.
Yeah. Dune fell from 1 to 2. Imaginary debuted at number 3. Cabrini, 4. Bob Molly dropped from 2 to 5. Ordinary Angels, 3 to 6. Madam Web, starring the amazing Dakota Johnson, fell from 5 to 7. Like Dakota Johnson and Gina Carano, my two favorite actresses. For totally political reasons. 6 to 8.
Those are the two you want to hang out with. We all know who your favorite actress was from Madam Web.
Fair. You know me so well.
I kind of hate that I do, but I do.
It's fair. Migration fell from 6 to 8. YOLO debuted at number 9. The Chosen, 4 to 10. Wonka dropped out of the top 10 to number 11.
It did just go to streaming.
Okay. Yeah. All right, and rounding out the top 20 are Demon Slayer, The Beekeeper, Argyle, Perfect Days, a bunch of Oscar-nominated short films, American Fiction, the Oscar-winning Poor Things.
No one cares.
Problemista and The Zone of Interest.
American Fiction and Zone of Interest also won Oscars.
They did.
Nobody cares about that.
Nobody cares about Poor Things either, but Mark will crow about this for the next 3 weeks.
Yep, I found a bone and I am a dog. Love Lies Bleeding debuted at number 21. Accidental Texan debuted at 23. High and Low, John Galliano, debuted at 45. Glitter and Doom, 52. And that was the weekend that was. Worldwide on the dime, baby.
Wait a minute. Was Love Lies Bleeding a limited release or a worldwide? Worldwide release. Because I've been seeing that movie advertised a lot. And if it opened that low, I was curious if.
It was a limited. I can tell you right now, it was a limited release because it says 5 theaters here.
Yeah. Okay. Wide release still coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, you messed me all up, Alexis. God damn you! All right. Worldwide.
Sorry.
Dune is the number one movie in the world with 300. It beat The Beekeeper. Oh my god!
So did Bob Marley.
Yeah. Finally.
I didn't worry.
Dune Part 2 is at $374 million, guaranteeing there will be a Dune Part 3, Dune Messiah. Bob Marley has...
You're being facetious. I think it has to hit half a billion before we get the guarantee.
Sure. Bob Marley is at number 2 at $160 million. The Beekeeper knocked out at number 3 at $152. Mean Girls clinging in the top 5 spot at number 4 at $104.
Also just went to streaming.
And holy shit, Madam Web made more movie than Argyle. That makes me sad.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to see Madam Web go down, down, down. Oh,
sure, as the year progresses. But I mean, that's high considering the content of Madam Web and poor Argyle, poor Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah, look, the only person in Argyle I feel bad for is Henry Cavill, because boy, he will unfairly get branded for that thing failing. Like that is not his fault. He's barely in the movie.
Yeah, that was a big bait and switch. All right. Kung Fu Panda debuted in the worldwide box office with $93 million at number 7. Night Swim from fucking January, first week of January, is at number 8. Demon Slayer two or three, whatever one this is.
Is it number nine? I think this is the third theatrical release for them.
Yeah. And Exuma is at number 10, closing out the top 10 at 44 million. And is there anything I want to make fun of? Let's see. Where is the Book of Clarence? Or whatever that movie is called.
No one cares.
Hey. Here are the movies currently doing better than Lisa Frankenstein. Dune 2024 release, Mobile Suit Gundam, The Master and Margarita, Mai, Golden, Kimoi, Lloyd, Autumn and the Black Jaguar, Ordinary Angels, like Academy. Oh God, it's Imaginary. There we go. There's one that's doing better than Lisa Frankenstein. That poor movie. They made less than 10 million. So that's the worldwide box office. I don't need to share this anymore.
Less than 10 million.
All right. We got a bye week coming up this Friday. Ain't nothing coming out worth talking about. So there is no Damn You Hollywood next week. I got to do a couple of TV shows with the pals. However, we will be back in the saddle again. Alexis, how excited are you? I kind of beat you up a few years ago about this. So this is we got a second chance here. How excited are you for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which comes out in 2 weeks from Friday?
He's so excited. Why the hell aren't they re-releasing Ecto Cooler?
Nerd.
I say we push something over. That is
Zach. Zach, do you live close to Alexis? Can you like stuff her in a locker for me?
No, I'm pretty sure what he just gave was a SpongeBob reference.
Yes.
I didn't notice it, so I'm not bullying him.
You know what you need to do is look up how to make your own Ecto Cooler.
I have found at least five different recipes. Hi-C will never release the actual.
Of course not.
Yeah. Why not? I found like five different versions of the recipe, including one person who said just get like orange Ecto Cooler and add a shit ton of green.
I have a suggestion, my adult friend, sweetie lady. Get yourself some of that melon liqueur that looks like Ecto Cooler and call it whatever the fuck you want and get pissed drunk. That's what I suggest. That's what adults do.
Well, for those of us who don't want to become alcoholics,
you're missing out.
On what?
Growing up at 3 a.m. Yay!
Yay!
Trust me, I went through that when I was staying in Amsterdam. Really not interested in reliving that experience.
I mean, Robert, you haven't lived until you've been having, you know, a friend hold your hair back as you puke your guts out into the toilet.
Yeah, like, I went through that again after drinking way too much Heineken and Red Bull going to an improv performance in Amsterdam.
Heineken and Red Bull? What the hell? That is an awful
combination. We had ordered a bottle of red wine for the table, and they were giving out free Heineken. It was an English-speaking improv group, and they were handing out free Heinekens if anyone shouted out a good suggestion for them.
Yeah.
So by the end, we had all had at least like two Heinekens brought to our table. I'm not a fan of it, but we were already kind of blitzed on the red wine, so we just kept drinking.
Oh, red wine. I think you said Red Bull. That's still a gross comedy.
If I said Red Bull, I'm sorry, no, red wine. We had a bottle of red wine for the table. We were blitzed on that. They brought the Heineken. It's like, well, okay, this tastes like shit. I'm going to keep drinking.
Well, that's drinking for you.
Yeah, I know, right?
Wow, right. Such a sales pitch.
You ever seen the Star Trek bit where they give Data the emotion chip and they give him alcohol for the first time?
Yes. Like,
this is wild.
Awful. What are you feeling? I hate this. Another.
Yes, please. Yeah, actually, you another? Yes, please. Yeah, that was probably the funniest moment in that whole movie.
Yeah, it's good stuff. All right. I think we're ready to move on to the final segment here. Ladies and gentlemen, in a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, Robert Winfrey and I used to notice there was a pattern with the critics. They stunk. And we decided that we speak truth to power here on Damn You Hollywood. God damn it. And so we will take these people to task. And we read their reviews, or portions of their reviews here in the next segment of our show called The Critical. Oh, no, that's the wrong button. The Critical Review.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
No! No, God, please, no, 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 no.
Well, folks, we have a 71% fresh tomato meter reading, and then we have an 87% audience score, which tells me both the critics and the audience went, what are you people moaning on about? This was just fine, which is okay.
Well, here's the thing. Before you hit the top critics button.
Yeah.
I said this isn't good, which I will stand by. However, if you ask me pass fail, right, which is what we're doing here with Rotten Tomatoes, is it a splat or is it not? I think it's just, there's enough elements to put it on to pass instead of pass fail, instead of fail, if that's the only metric I have to work with.
So you'd give it like a C plus?
Oh, not, that's being generous.
I'd give it a C.
Yeah, it's a solid C. All right, so.
Leaning towards minus.
Top critics drops us down to 65%. So
that, yeah, again, that's about more. That's probably more reflective of actual quality, but you know.
And the audience drops it to a nil, 82 from 87. Yeah. So the artificial intelligence tells us that Kung Fu Panda 4 offers enough eye-catching entertainment to sustain the franchise's young fans, although it's starting to feel like this series is running out of steam.
Even ChatGPT knows what's up with this.
Even ChatGPT originally wrote, if you like jingling keys and bright colors, you'll be fine, you moron. And somebody had to massage it.
Yeah, no. Then the person at the computer then went, I appreciate the sentiment, but can you phrase it in a non-insulting way? Yes, I can. Here you go.
All right. This is also the part of the program where I start to marry off my co-host to various critics.
It is very odd that you're so stuck on that gimmick.
Have you met me? I'm stuck on shit we started doing back in 2015.
Yeah. I'm aware. I'm surprised that's the one that stuck is all.
Are you kidding? Robert, did I tell you what he did when I sent him a couple of cosplay pics from Planet Comic-Con this last weekend?
Oh, this is a great story.
Please.
Just hey,
remember last week when you referred to me as the casual misogynist? Go, Alexis.
So just for fun, I sent him a handful of cosplay pics, one of them of a particularly sexy Tinkerbell. And I will get a direct quote from Mr. Radulich here.
No, please.
Sorry.
Yeah. Here, I'm going to hold this up. Tell Tinker I said.
We're not going to be able to. The eyes.
Tell Tinkerbell I said I sent her the Tex Avery wolf eyes.
Yeah, the other chicks are cute too, but Tinkerbell might be the future ex Mrs. Radulich.
I mean, I'm stacking them as we speak.
Do you need a third? I feel like by the time you're on the third, you need to actually aim for this to last.
We'll see. I feel like I started a really good habit. I want to stick with it. You know what I mean?
You're joking about your trauma, so I'm going to let it slide.
Thanks, boss.
Yeah.
All right,
for the record, actually, I've completely forgotten. I need to send a bunch of those cosplay pics to the group chat.
I would not believe
the amount of has-been hotel cosplayers.
Speaking of casual misogyny, before we get into this.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who don't know, I cover mixed martial arts for 411mania.com, and this year I'm tracking my predictions because I predict every fight on every card that I
cover.
This
is then with you saying stupid girls.
So... last night, Sunday, there was an event, 14 fights. I went 12-2. The only two fights I got wrong were both women's fights. So my joke, which is like, look, that's not the end of the world. I get fights wrong all the time. Again, I'm tracking that this year. But because I was then talking about the ones I got wrong when I started my podcast, out slipped stupid women. Ruined my perfect event, so I had to stop and explain. One, I love female, like, there are some genuinely exceptional female fights out there. Neither was on this card, for the record. They were not great fights.
I'm gonna take credit for your current behavior. I feel like I've had a really positive impact on you and all the people, all my children, I've had a positive impact on. So
yeah, when your son starts going after your daughter with a
starting. Dude, that girl can't open up her phone. Hang on, I'm just fucking this. So I took Lily out. So back up. So Bonus Kid brought his best friend over for the weekend. And so there were three mildly gay, half-naked boys running around my house causing destruction, including breaking this poor girl's door in the horse play they were doing. And
broke her door.
Yeah. The adults that run this house that when I'm not here are, I'm not allowed to say anything mean. Anyway, So I said to her on Sunday, I was like, I know you've had kind of a rough weekend. Do you want some like alone time to get out of this house? Like I'll drop Jonas off after the movie and then I'll take you back out again and get you away from all this. She was like, oh, please God, yes. So we're talking and I didn't think we were going to get into like a big long conversation, but like I made a casual comment about her and one of her friends and out came everything she's been thinking for the past year. It was nice. I like connecting with my daughter that way. But one of the things she said is, and another thing I don't like, I'm like, oh my God. is she goes, dinner conversation is domineered by Jonas because he always wants to be talking. And anytime I try to voice an opinion or come up with a topic to talk about, he just shouts me down. I was like, okay. Like, so between the, she's not allowed to have opinions on movies because her opinions are dumb according to him. And she's not allowed to have like start dinner conversations because her conversations are boring. I'm like, I have to have a talk with Jonas. So yeah, there is no like starting with the casual misogyny with him. It's already begun. Like it's like, we're well into it.
Would you like to tell your daughter she's welcome to come on one of my shows if she'd like?
Well, I would, and I would have made that offer to her anyway, but she doesn't she does not have, unless you're doing something about Twisted Wonderland, not a whole lot of interest there.
Oh my God. You've lost her to Twisted Wonderland.
A long time ago. Apparently that's one of the things she keeps wanting to talk about at dinner. And Jonas is like, nobody wants to hear that shit. I'm like, oh my God. All right. Enough about my family life. Hey, speaking of poor families, Doug Walker from Channel Awesome. Well, nowhere near as deep or epic as previous installments. There is just enough comedy and heart to make this a passable family film. It's basically
kind of where we landed.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like Mr. Jeffrey Harris down there says the exact same thing.
Friend of the show, Jeffrey Harris of 411mania.com. Kung Fu Panda 4 doesn't quite reach the previous heights of the franchise, but it still provides a fun, entertaining, and exciting adventure for Poe as he seeks to come to terms with the next steps in his life. I don't want to pick at Jeff too much, but that also sounds like he read ad copy from Universal. Let's see.
There is something to be said about a movie that's so predictable that we're all kind of, it's like, yeah, we all sound like we're saying ad copy, but guess what? That's just literally what we all took from this.
Sometimes Kevin, when you make a very bland corporate product, the only thing to say about it is bland corporatisms, and you're not sure if it's ad copy or your genuine opinion.
Kevin, that's a fun game to play. Ad copy or opinion.
you're not wrong. That's half of what we do here.
I know, right?
Kevin Carr, fat guy at the movies. This was just enough movie for Kevin. Good job, Kevin. Give him a gold star or maybe a sticker that smells like strawberries. The series is running out of steam, but the energy of the cast keeps this one going.
It should be noted his score is 2.5 out of 4, so it is just barely a smidgen in the red, not in the green, as it were.
The future Mr. Haina, Jeremy Johns of jeremyjohns.com says, some fun.
I don't make my husband's take my last name. Thank you.
You would for him.
Some fun action sequences.
He is the woman in that relationship. If you ever met Jeremy Johns.
All right. Jeremy Bottoms Johns of jeremyjohns.com. Some fun action sequences and slick animation aside, it's another case of a forced fourth installment that doesn't justify its own existence.
Again, he's not 100% wrong.
He's not wrong.
Nate Adams of The Only Critic. Well, that's a lie. Animated series has lost the thunder.
Not sure why you went with thunder, but again, you're touching on something that's accurate.
Tanner Gordon of Spectrum Culture having an existential moment here. We didn't ask for it, but we got it anyways.
I imagine this is his code word as a cry for help.
Let's see here.
You know, for what it's worth, that upcoming DreamWorks film with the robot in the wilderness, that looks really good.
Oh my God, my kids came out of their fucking chairs for that. And like, and I said, well, early contender for best animated feature.
No, I really want to see it. I look for Zach, I hope you kidding. And I can definitely review that.
That one I may make you guys do that with on here proper because that looked really good. Like I'll probably go see it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm willing to do animated features that are good, Alexis. Don't shun me.
I'm not shunning you. I'm just saying that I think Zach and I kind of hold dominion on animation.
I hold dominion, sweetie. I pay for this.
What you have over animation is called a fiefdom.
Good word use. Like, I applaud that one.
Yeah, you're the mayor of you're the mayor of a town in my country, kiddo. All righty. Rachel Wagner of RachelReviews.net provided a good mixture of laughs and sweet moments. A lot of like basic. Ah, here we go. Here's my little darling. There's your boo. The future ex Mrs. Robert Winfrey, caller Renata of the Curvy Film Critic. Jack Black and Awkwafina are the perfectly blended buddy duo pairing with Viola Davis, providing just the right amount of vitriol to ensure the chameleon is memorable, despicable, villainous adversary. Is that just one long run-on sentence?
Yes, congratulations. I was waiting for the second half of this to be, and was it? And my mother was in the Amazon examining spiders when she died. Like it's that terrible sentence structure.
For the record, can I get her definition of vitriol? Because I don't think we're on the same page there not. As far as the chameleon.
All she did was pick out found a bunch of synonyms for despicable, and just found ones that she liked. There's no.
Yeah,
way.
I'm just gonna say it. The chameleon will go down as the most until 5 and 6 come out. So I reserve the right to change it. But at the moment, I claim the chameleon will go down as the most forgettable of DreamWorks villains.
Yeah, easily for this franchise.
The future ex Mrs. Zachary Strobel, Amy Nicholson of the Washington Post top critic.
That's mean, man.
You're in the club now, Zach.
No. You're stuck being part of the club. I mean, Amy Nicholson is the mean part of this one. Don't do that to Zach. He's a good boy.
I am a good boy.
I don't know, Zach. How do you feel about me marrying you off to Amy Nicholson of what fucking publication?
She's gonna try to take 70% of your assets in this divorce.
Your next book is gonna be written by Amy Nicholson, whether she had anything to do with it or not.
Yes, she's gonna take your Pinocchio stuff and then pretend she returned it to you while you desperately throw yourself on the mercy of the court and the judge will never hear you.
Yeah, speaking of being forced to do things, Zach's like, I don't know what to say. I don't even know who this bitch is. moving on. Jack Black keeps the fists and giggles flying in a sequel that's more hustle than heart. Ugh.
I don't like it.
I think that's a Tick Bird review.
Yeah, it's getting there.
Let's see. Rafer Guzman of Newsday, top critic, Newsday, former newspaper. Kung Fu Panda 4 will probably sail right out of your head the minute you leave the theater, but that's all right.
You know what? That's kind of what you said, Mark.
But I didn't say it was good.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like, how does that really earn the tomato and not a splat?
It's more acknowledging that there's a place for this kind of sort of shallow, banal entertainment that's more or less well-executed, deliberately forgettable cotton candy of filmmaking.
All right.
Mark's good friend.
I'm going to end with this one. Yes, friend of the show, whether he knows it or not, William Bibbiani of The Film Verdict, and also a podcast that I very much enjoy with my best friend, Whitney Seibold, called Critically Acclaimed. William Bibbiani has had a rough year, and I think it shows in the following review.
It really does.
I don't know what happened to you, man, but those people are bad people for whatever it is they did to you that you came up with this. Oi. There's an argument to be made, Zach Strobel, that, and I'm willing to make it, says William Bibbiani, that Kung Fu Panda 4 is the best film in the series.
And I can argue that 2 plus 2 is 5.
That is beyond ridiculous. Like, I don't know what William Bibbiani is auditioning for here.
He thought this was a Sony picture, and that if he was nice enough, they'd put him on the board.
You got anything to say, Zach?
I could say random words.
You're a good boy, Zach. Well, folks, you're a good boy, Zach, is the phrase that pays here on Damn You Hollywood. So that brings us to the end of our leanest review yet. In just under, well, no, the next segment is plugs, and that'll take 30 minutes. So that is our review of Kung Fu Panda 4. We're taking a week off next week. I will be reviewing Sons of Anarchy season 2.
Pretty good.
And then Star Trek Lower Deck season 4 with my man David Wright.
Also pretty good.
And then on Thursday, Sean Comer and I will be doing a triple feature. We're focusing on Jim Jarmusch. We are reviewing Coffee and Cigarettes, Ghost Dog, and The Dead Don't Die. So that'll be fun. And that entire thing was motivated by my desire to talk with somebody, anyone who would listen, about Coffee and Cigarettes. And mostly Robert Winfrey of the Screaming Boy podcast, the scene of Bill Murray talking to the Wu-Tang Clan.
Mark, Wu-Tang. I would... Okay. I understand that Bill Murray and the Wu-Tang Clan sharing the screen is one of like your personal signs that I can die happy now. I understand that.
Yep.
I would be more than happy to talk Jim Jarmusch movies with you. That guy is one of the... He is a weird, weird filmmaker, but it's the kind of weird that I can rock with.
Well, if you want to come on, you know, you and Sean like each other, so I can allow that.
I don't know that the timing works out for Thursdays. For
oh, my God. Moment, never mind. But so there's no Damn You Hollywood.
Appreciate next, the invite.
Sure. But we will be back in 2 weeks, back on our normal night of... No, we'll be back in 2 weeks on this night, on a Tuesday, because... I don't want to make the joke. But hey, Ronnie Adams is coming on the Whiskey Rebellion on our Monday time slot to talk all things Ghostbusters, including Frozen Empire. And then on Tuesday, it'll be myself, Robert, and Alexis talking Frozen Empire here on Damn You Hollywood.
So I fully expect that movie to suck.
Okie dokie. Speaking of sucking, Zachary Strobel, tell them where they can find your books.
Well, first, let me start with my plug.
Hang on.
Okay, Mark, you need to add to the soundboard the Boo This Man clip.
It's more true, Robert.
Okay, I never... So, Alexis, I need the seal again, and I need you to find me Boo This Man, and I will upload them. Just find me the videos. Send me the videos. Make it happen, monkey.
Okay. To answer your question, Mark, you can find my books on Amazon. I know, I've never heard of it either. But if you want, we've got some books. If you type in Zachary Strobel books, you will find some fun books that have messages and very entertaining and pretty pictures. They're good for kids between the ages of 5 and 12. And we have books like Dinosaurs on the Moon, Quail Tales, The Adventures of Button. My personal favorite, which saying a lot, Friendship Sanctuary, which is like Zootopia meets Star Wars meets Looney Tunes, which I don't know why anyone would like that, but it exists. And they're really good. And I'm not just saying that.
Okay. All right. Thank you for coming on, Zachary. Always a pleasure to have you. You're a good boy, Zach. Alexis Haina, you're a good girl. Why don't you tell us where they can find your wares that are constantly getting you in trouble with the federal government?
Yeah. So, fun. Okay, so before I go into the plugs, fun little fact here. Amazon, Handmade at Amazon, which is what I sell through two shops, Etsy and Handmade at Amazon. Etsy will not flag your items unless somebody makes a complaint. For example, Valve got me in trouble because they said I couldn't do my Portal earrings. But credit to them, actually, I contacted a lawyer through them, told him I would take it down, and they were very polite and actually sent a message to Etsy saying we are retracting our complaints. So, you know, it's not always, doesn't always end badly. With Handmade and Amazon, they apparently do not wait for someone to launch a complaint. They just go through the various things and they go, wait, this might get us in trouble. My favorite was when they forced me to take down my Mandalorian jewelry because it was apparently the same colors as an NHL team.
That's my favorite one of your stories.
I still have no idea why they thought this was a thing. And I have no idea how, and I sent the mail going like, it's like silver and blue. This has nothing to do with that, but falls on deaf ears. So they launched a thing saying your items are at risk of deactivation because there's a possible trademark misuse with the word Scrabble. Those of you who know my jewelry line, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, you know that I upcycle game pieces into jewelry. Dominoes, dice, Jenga blocks, battleship, operation, and yes, Scrabble tiles. That I would argue is actually the backbone of my company. And even though people have been making crafts out of Scrabble tiles for years, not just jewelry, but more crafts than I think you could even imagine. Magnets, picture frames, wall decor, toys, ornaments, the list goes on. They are now saying, nope, this pair of cufflinks that are made out of Scrabble tiles could get us in trouble. So I've been spending the last 2 days going through as many items as I can and changing it to wooden tile jewelry. And as I go through here, you will see that... No, stop that. Scroll. See that I haven't gotten to all of them. Oh, see, Apple says Scrabble, but I am working on it. There is over 190 items in my shop. And again, majority of them are made of Scrabble tiles. But now I'm done with the bitching because you know what? I am still proud of my work. You can find all of our awesome geek-themed jewelry on Etsy and handmade at Amazon. We just wrapped up our first convention of the year at Planet Comic Con in Kansas City. I have never seen crowds that big. I would like to thank Matthew Lillard and Keith David for really bringing in the numbers. Because from what I heard, those two, the floor closed at 8 o'clock. Apparently, those two didn't go home till 10:30 because they still had lines of autographs to sign. I think at one point I messaged on Facebook at 1 a.m. I was like, "Could someone please go make sure Mr. Lillard isn't being held against his will?" You know, I heard he was amazing with his fans. Yeah, apparently, he smiled and autographed and had a great time with them. So, you know, credit to you, Mr. Lillard. You're apparently a great guy. But yes, so that was
Perpetual actor in geek products steps into a villainous role in one of the most popular geek games/movies of recent memory. That's a recipe for a big turnout.
You would not. Okay. Besides the Hazbin Hotel cosplays, which I knew were going to be big just because that just came out. I saw a million Shaggies, a million Springtraps, and my favorite, a million people wearing that beige corded sweater that Stu wears at the end of Scream, covered in blood.
Nice.
It's like, I want to know where all these people, okay, because I knew they all did it different because they all had different blood splatter. I was like, where is everyone finding this beige corded sweater? Because everyone had it. I knew it was the exact same sweater, just different blood splatters. So, yes, so we're taking a little break to fix all of this stuff here on our Amazon shop. But regardless, everything is still listed. Like, so I just got to change the title. I need to double check what our next convention is, but I believe it's LPLCon in Lawrence, Kansas. Small show, but we have a lot of fun with them. Looking forward to it. Again, you can always follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I still refuse to call it X, and TikTok. Again, that's Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic.
Robert Winfrey, give us your picks, baby. Give us your picks.
I cover mixed martial arts and professional wrestling over at 411mania.com. Let's see. When MLW has stuff up, I cover that. They haven't in a little bit, so I imagine later this month.
When is the big cage, war game show that they're doing?
I'm not sure.
What UCU?
It's MLW, man.
if I know about it, it means that they're advertising it on Facebook or something. How do you not know about this?
I'm aware. No, I'm aware that War Chamber exists. I actually know what it's called. I don't know when because they don't have a weekly show at the moment. What they're doing right now is they're just vomiting out one 90-minute or 2-hour episode of all the non-pay-per-view stuff that they tape at a pay-per-view.
Gotcha.
So if there's something that they're putting out, I'll cover it. If not, then I won't. I cover WWE SmackDown on Friday, so be on the lookout for that because they're ramping up for WrestleMania coming up very soon. And I cover UFC events on Saturday, on most Saturdays. So last Saturday was UFC 299, a very good pay-per-view on paper that turned out to be good to pretty good in practice. A few odd choices aside and a few, there were a couple of lackluster fights. But on the whole, pretty solid. If you want in-depth reviews, you can listen to me talk about it on the 411 Ground and Pound MMA podcast, or you can read my reviews over at 411mania.com. That would be in the MMA zone. This coming Saturday, we're back in the UFC's warehouse for a very uninspired card. It's a warehouse. I don't know what else to tell you.
It's so funny. It's like, we're packing. Like, there's going to be guys like running like pallet trucks and like moving boxes and shit.
There's a forklift driver there, I'm pretty sure. He's fighting for 10 and 10. but so if you want me to, if you want to listen to me review, review UFC 299, preview the upcoming one, talk about the death of journalism in MMA because Bloody Elbow got sold and now it's all just the worst. Talk about Francis Ngannou getting knocked out cold in like 3.5 Dude, minutes.
Got hit so hard. You saw his soul come out playing a harp.
He woke up and thought he was back in the sand mines of Cameroon, I'm pretty sure.
He lost math for the next 3 years. You ask that guy what 2 + 2 is, he's going to say shoes.
So I talked a little bit about that and how despite getting
like,
knocked out.
Can we talk about how Anthony's Joshua's fucking punch was like Hollywood perfect? He hit that punch that knocked out Francis Ngannou looked like the cover of a comic book.
A little bit, so yeah. Good.
It's like he was lying down seeing stars, wasn't he?
Oh no,
he
made that.
He was dead on the canvas for a long time.
Francis Ngannou had a lump come out of his head, and birds were flying around. It was that bad.
Dude, they didn't show the knockout punch for like 2 minutes because they had to make sure he was okay.
Yeah, they gave him smelling salts and they opened up his eyelids and it said no sale. What I like is that I can do all the cartoon references and Alexis just fucking nails every last one. She's like, I got that one. I got that one.
Well, you can hear me talking about that and how he got paid $20 million for that despite
getting knocked the fuck out.
And idiots on Twitter being, hey, would you take $20 million to get knocked out like this? And everyone and their dog going, yes.
And then the next day, because Robert Winfrey did voodoo magic and made this happen, because I had an intellectual, elevated, ascended debate about the need for marketing and boxing for events to draw new fans. And Robert Winfrey said, I will punish you. I will voodoo doll you. I will make you pay for this. And boom, Jake Paul versus octogenarian Mike Tyson on Netflix in a Dallas fucking Cowboy Stadium. Ugh.
How has this team not made voodoo dolls of each other at this point?
This is a very specific fight Robert and I are having.
Look, Mark likes the circus until someone takes the circus to its logical conclusion. Then he goes, what are y'all doing? This is stupid. And everyone and their dog looks at Mark and goes, you cheerleaded this. And he goes, but I didn't know what I wanted.
This is your fault. And I'm like, I didn't want it. I didn't want it like this. I didn't want this.
Every tragic hero in every story about that, like I wanted to make a robot that I could talk with. I didn't know I was going to make the Terminator.
Yeah, no, this is me at the end of the party in Babylon covered in naked hookers and cocaine going, I didn't want any of this. I just wanted to be an actor.
Look, all I know, I don't know anything about fighting. I have not followed anything with Logan Paul's fights or whatever. Jake, mostly just Logan laughing at that stupid Charizard necklace that he made. But I will say that when you guys pulled that up saying he was fighting Mike Tyson, I think I sat back and said, wow, not even Sylvester Stallone would have written something this stupid for a Rocky sequel.
I don't know anything about kung fu fighting except everyone was doing it.
Twang.
Again, you got to pull it back. Hey, no, you're still up too high. You got to get right in the crease.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
And that is that's the clip that's going to get us in trouble.
Dude, I did that last night on the Metal Hopper.
It was kung fu fighting.
Wang.
Your daughter felt the disturbance in the force.
That was my son. My son was like, here's my moment to be racist on camera. I did that last night of the Metal Hammer of Doom jukebox, and Jesse almost jumped out of his fucking chair. Like somebody from YouTube was going to grab him.
He felt the Apollo hook coming from the side. And just...
All right, if you're done with your
plugs. All right. Anyway, so that's where you can find me doing other stuff. So tune in for that, and I will message Mark my picks because he's decided that this is a good idea. And I tell people, don't
I've
bet
decided
on
I'm
MMA.
Rooting from the deuce. I'm not greedy. I'm not greedy.
Betting on MMA is a bad idea. That's all I'm saying.
Everything I do is a bad idea, Robert. How long have we been friends now? All right.
That's not just you. That's everybody. Dude, Drake's lost more money than I'm going to make in my entire life betting on this sport.
On Sunday, speaking of making too much money that you lose, Sean Comer and I reviewed The Great Gatsby. What a weird podcast that was. It was fun. It was a good discussion, but... And then me and my homeboy, we did the Metal Hammer of Doom jukebox. We looked at Ministry of Hopium for the Masses. So
How much of that podcast was Sean talking about the sexual chemistry between DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire?
So much. So much.
Yeah, I was joking the whole time.
Like, the podcast is an hour and a half long, and an hour and 20 minutes of it was that. I felt like Tobey Maguire in the car with DiCaprio as he's telling him about his history. Like, I don't want to be here, but I can't get out of the car.
We did 87 takes, and that was the best one.
Anyway, we did The Great Gatsby on Sunday as an on-trial. Yesterday, we did Ministry of Hopium for the Masses. Take a drink every time I said homo pile, and you'll be blackout drunk in that 2.5-hour podcast. And then Thursday, Bloody Thursday, this was supposed to be a triple feature, but we can't find Spice World or Satisfaction. So instead, we're doing an on-trial for the Rachel Lee Cook masterpiece, Josie and the Pussycats. So that'll be me and Pat Mullen having fun. We're having fun this year. In the year of our Lord 2024, we're having fun on the Rattling
Everything. You have, so no, you want to have some real fun with Josie and the Pussycats. One of you needs to have a tally of how many product placements are in that movie.
So many.
Take a shot.
Oh, I know. Oh, are you kidding me? That we used just the trailer for that when we were studying product placement and advertising in college. They just literally aired the trailer.
All right, folks. Thank you for joining us here on Damn You Hollywood. For those of you who, we had a really sizable audience, almost the entire podcast. Thanks.
Thank you.
Also, hi. No. We appreciate you all. Glad you had fun with this. And we managed to keep it under 2 hours, even though our plugs were an hour of it. So for Robert Winfrey, Alexis Hainer, and he's a good boy, good to his mother, Zachary Strobel, the singing and dancing Zachary Strobel, that is, be well, be safe, and behave.